Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is February 2nd, 2017, and joining me today, we have a full complement, Senator Stevens, Vice Chair Senator Hughes, Senator Meyer, and Senator Gardner. Welcome. And in case anyone's not sure what I said, I was about to plug our committee Facebook page, which is a way to keep up with what we're doing in this Committee on the Economy, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. So this morning we are going to be looking at a bill, and I've invited the sponsor of the bill along with myself. We both introduced this together. Senator Anna McKinnon, welcome.
Thank you.
And I'd like to give you an opportunity to start off the committee with some introductory remarks, because I know that you have someplace else to go. So welcome.
Thank you, Senator Costello, senators. My name is Anna McKinnon. I represent a small community, but one that has been disadvantaged by transportation needs. And there are many communities around our states that are disadvantaged for a variety of reasons. Madam Chairman, I am here to speak in favor of SB 14 to support the need for Alaska to include transportation network companies inside of Alaska state statute and allow them to come into our communities and provide needed transportation and work opportunities for folks of low income, folks of high income, whoever, whatever, wherever. As a member and a resident of Chugiak Eagle River for over 25 years, we have tried to access traditional systems of transportation. When we get on buses, we fill the buses up, and because of the calculation of the ridership there, our bus out of the municipality of Anchorage area is the first one to be cut each time it comes forward, because there aren't people getting on and off the bus. So it's a calculation at a city level, and Eagle River, specifically Chugiak, Peters Creek, is always disadvantaged, and our bus route is the first one to get cut from the municipality of Anchorage. Madam Chairman, we've tried to take the bus. That hasn't worked out for my community. We've tried to solicit taxi cab drivers to come out into our community, but it's not an economic advantage for them to do so. When I served on the Anchorage Assembly, as others on your committee have, we tried to institute a chauffeur license that could be given in the Eagle River Chugiak community, Peters Creek, to provide airport rides back and forth, but that hasn't worked out very well either. Now, this is dated information, I'll tell you. When the taxi cab drivers saw competition, as I understand it, complaints were made, and so the chauffeur that we did have that could that could transport people back and forth to my community was relegated to a spot that he could never get a pickup coming back, and so it wasn't necessarily economic for the chauffeur to provide that service, though I believe it is still continued to be offered today. Madam Chairman, we are an underserved community. There are many across the state. I would think Bethel, other locations are short of service. We've tried the public transportation option. It continues to provide less and less service for us. This bill before us, SB 14, provides a job opportunity for those single moms or those that are in transition. It provides open opportunities for different hours of work that could be variable. So I think of my history as a single mom about 15 years ago. And if I were a single mom trying to stay at home with a family, if I had this possibility for employment as a single person, not necessarily just a mom, but a single mom or a dad, I could have worked between 9 a.m. and 3 in the afternoon until my kids got off work, and had a opportunity that I don't have today. So I think that there's a possibility for economic growth in allowing transportation network companies to operate in Alaska. Madam Chairman, this could reduce commuters on the highway in some kind of job or ride-sharing opportunity. I think it can increase safety and reliability. The ridership companies that offer these sometimes have screening programs. I understand that not all programs screen everything, but these types of companies are evolving. And quite frankly, Madam Chairman, while I do not have any kind of app on my on my my communication system, I have taken a ride with one of these companies, and it was very nice. It was on time. and there was a feeling of safety available for those that were accessing the ride because you were in control of that opportunity. So, Madam Chairman, what I want to leave you and the committee with mostly is that there are Alaskans and Alaska communities that are disadvantaged, that we don't have transportation options. And you might note in your package that the Chugiak Eagle River Chamber came out immediately to let you know that we are in favor of allowing transportation network companies to come into Alaska and that it would be an economic engine for our community and I believe for all of Alaska. And I appreciate you allowing me to speak first so that I can excuse myself and go on to another committee that's working right now.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon, especially for sharing how critical this bill is to your constituents and in your community. Before you leave, are there any questions of the senator? Thank you very much, Senator McKinnon. We'll take a brief at ease. The Commerce Committee is called back to order. And this afternoon, we just had Senator McKinnon share with us her interest in being a sponsor of Senate Bill 14, along with myself. Before I get into the order of business for today, I wanted to mention that the bill before us this afternoon, it falls in context with the economists that we've been hearing from. As we know, we started out the session with several hearings on the state of Alaska's economy, and we heard the need for diversification. We heard the need for increased jobs during a time of recession. We heard about the need for opportunities for people that expand, you know, their ability to earn, to make a living. So today we're going to be hearing Senate Bill 14, the Let's Ride Alaska Act, which paves the way for rideshare companies like Lyft and Uber to operate in Alaska. And so as we continue with the committee, the first bill will be focusing on the economy. So, as we heard last week, a recent survey of Alaskans by the State Department of Commerce found that economic development is overwhelmingly the issue that would make Alaska a better place to live. Bringing rideshare companies to our state is a great way to move the economy forward through innovation. So, this afternoon, the intent is to hear the bill, take members' questions, take public testimony, and then set the bill aside for further review, which is pretty much standard for the committee to keep bills for more than one hearing. So with that, I would like to welcome my aide, Weston Eiler, who will be going over the details of the bill for you. Welcome, Weston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, Weston Eiler, staff to Senator Costello. Senate Bill 14, the Let's Ride Alaska Act, improves transportation and economic opportunity in Alaska through innovation. The bill makes amendments to state law to provide the clarity to allow rideshare companies to operate in Alaska. Rideshare companies, sometimes known as transportation network companies, it's a relatively new concept with a very simple premise. They use technology to create a platform to connect Alaskans to help them get from here to there. It's an innovative way using new technology, using something as simple as a smartphone app to connect Alaskans and create transportation solutions. During the past decade, Madam Chair, companies such as Lyft, Uber, Sidecar have truly revolutionized how people travel in cities worldwide, both visitors and residents. Using something simple as a smartphone app, these companies create a platform that connects private drivers with people looking for a ride. And we'll talk about a variety of examples in which that occurs, whether it be getting to and from for an evening dinner, whether it be carpooling on demand, or whether it just be a bridge of employment for Alaskans. It creates numerous benefits for our state and really revolutionizes just the whole paradigm for community transportation. The result that happens when using and when these companies go to work is a quick cashless transportation solution. It's all digitalized. It's based on an app. It's based off of credit card sales. It connects people by themselves. You're using an app, and basically a platform is the real concept of if you're looking for a ride or if you're looking to provide a ride. These drivers and riders self-select each other through the app, make their trip, conduct their business, and then digitally can even rate the experience of how it went, both from the driver and the customer's perspective. What Senate Bill 14 does is it authorizes the use, or the, excuse me, the operations of rideshare companies in Alaska, and it provides clarity to Alaska's insurance and workers' compensation statutes. Rideshare drivers operate in their own cars. They're private vehicles that are inspected for safety and put up to par and standards of the rideshare companies. They're simply using an app. Companies like Lyft, Ubers, and others are not transportation companies, they're technology companies. What they do is they basically just provide, again, a platform that connects people looking to provide a ride or to get a ride. And thus, under state statute, under Senate Bill 14, rideshare drivers would be classified as independent contractors, exempted from workers' compensation, similar to taxi drivers in state law. The bill also requires a variety of safety background checks, zero substance abuse policies, and numerous other safeguards. I might just step off a little bit, Madam Chair, and talk a little bit about Uber, which is kind of the growing market share, the largest transportation network company that we'll be hearing from today. They previously have operated in Alaska and racked up over 100 drivers in Anchorage. Alaskans, both through their Uber's experience in Alaska and traveling abroad, over 20,000 Alaskans have downloaded the Uber app. The benefits of when these companies go to work are really remarkable. It not only provides a very flexible form of work whereby which professionals, people in their downtime, college students, members of the armed forces, they can turn on and off the app as they are driving around or as they have free time. What that does is, again, creates a very nimble platform to whether if you're looking for a new job, if you're needing to create more income. The statistic we have is 50% of Uber drivers average fewer than 10 hours a week. It's a very nimble way to do it and fits squarely under what we see with independent contractor-style work. The other benefits, Madam Chair, is that it creates thousands of jobs that are very nimble and, again, fit with youth and a variety of demographics in Alaska's population. It also, Madam Chair, has been shown to increase public safety through reduction of DUI, DWI convictions. It makes it easier for people to get a ride, to extricate themselves after bar close, or in situations where they need a ride quickly. It, again, is a very efficient manner because it's really in live time. You're seeing the cars around you. You're tracking it when you're in a car yourself, and it's, again, very nimble and capable platform. They estimate, Madam Chair, that since these rideshare companies have begun in the last decade, over 2 billion rides have occurred. So, again, the magnitude at which this is impacting community transportation is really hard to understate. You also, Madam Chair, will hear a little bit about the safety standards that these rideshare companies provide. They are accredited through the National Association of Professional Background Screeners. We'll also have folks from Uber actually give a demonstration of the insurance policies and the coverage that takes both the driver and the passenger throughout the entire course of a trip. So we'll be talking with the industry here, and I'll let them cover some of those details. But with your permission, Madam Chair, I'll just conclude the remarks by going through a sectional analysis of the bill, if you would like. Madam Chair, members will have the sectional, and I'll also note that Megan Wallace, our drafter from Legislative Legal, is with us in the audience.
Weston, I also want to mention that Rhonda Gerhards from the Division of Workers' Compensation and the Department of Labor is online and available for questions. And so after Weston goes through the sectional, we'll open it up for questions.
Yep. And thank you, Madam Chair. We also have representatives, I believe, from the Department of Commerce to cover the insurance aspect of it, as well as the Director of Workers' Comp. Madam Chair, the concept of the bill itself is not necessarily what's in the substance of the legislation. What this bill does, again, is create a level playing field to allow rideshare companies to operate in Alaska. And it does that by amendments to Alaska's insurance and workers' compensation statutes. Beginning with Section 1, Madam Chair, it basically lays out the intent of the bill. I'll just read that into the record with your permission. That is the intent of the legislature to clarify the Alaska's Workers' Compensation Act ensure the safety, reliability, and cost-effectiveness of rides provided by transportation network company drivers in the state, and preserve and enhance access to those to these important transportation options for residents and of visitors to the state. Section 2, Madam Chair, lays out some of the insurance provisions. It amends Alaska Statute Title 21 with a new section relating to, again, the technical term transportation network company insurance drivers. What this does is, again, delineates when various forms of insurance are covering rideshare drivers. If you are a driver for Uber or for Lyft, it's really as simple as turning on the app or basically putting on a different hat. You can be driving around conducting business on your way to the store, and you can turn on the app and then begin looking for or looking to be matched with someone who's looking for a ride. These first provisions delineate how that works, and again, we'll have a demonstration and visual description of that in a moment. Section 3 amends AS 23 to exclude transportation network company drivers from the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. In the bill itself, Madam Chair, that begins on page 3. Section 3 begins on page 9. The new language is actually on the following page, but I'll also just note for members' information on line 20, it's existing language, but you also see it's an exemption from for taxi cab drivers from workers' compensation, which was done by the legislature in the 1990s. The new language for transportation network company drivers is on page 4, beginning on lines 8. Continuing, Madam Chair, Section 4 deals with definitions. Section 5, again, kind of talks a little bit more about, it inserts a new chapter, clarifying, again, if you are, when you're wearing the hat as a transportation network driver or yourself. The line 26 requires a transportation network company shall comply with the provisions of AS 43, the business licensing statutes. Continuing on, Madam Chair, the next few sections, again, under Title 28, basically lay out the parameters of what the rideshare companies, again, the ones providing the platform, are required to provide, those being electronic receipts, those being different forms of identification for drivers. And then it continues on to page 5. Line 17, talking about the financial responsibility of transportation network companies. You'll note, especially, Madam Chair, that during the course of a trip, and this is talked about on line 28 of page 5, primary automobile liability insurance, $50,000 for death bodily injury, $100,000 for death bodily injury, $25,000. During the course of the trip, and we'll have Uber and representatives from the industry speak to this, there's actually $1 million of coverage that is in place, but we'll lay that out here. The provisions for insurance are continued on to page 6. The next section, Madam Chair, that I would highlight is on page 8, line 3. This exempts rideshare drivers. Again, Uber is so common it's almost become a verb, so I'll apologize if I interjected there. But again, as transportation network company drivers are being classified as independent contractors, they are exempt from unemployment insurance. Continuing on that page on line 16 is the zero tolerance for drug and alcohol use. 22 sets out additional requirements for network drivers, and again we'll talk a little bit about the background checks that are required. That continues on to page 9. Again, talking about the background checks, the use of the Department of Justice National Sex Offendery public website. Line 7 on page 9 is a non-discrimination clause. And at the bottom of page 9, continuing into page 10 and concluding the bill, Madam Chair, are a series of definitions, again, providing for these new provisions, prearranged ride, transportation network company. Madam Chair, I'll just conclude that, again, one of the things we'll emphasize is that these rides and many of the provisions of the bill clarify and allow for these companies to operate. They are currently in over 47 states. Other states, including, I believe, Wyoming and South Dakota, are currently pursuing a similar legislation. So this is an active discussion that's happening in states and legislatures across the country. This bill will really enable these companies to go to work here in Alaska while providing a level playing field and the safeguards needed to protect Alaskans and our drivers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Weston. Are there any questions? Senator Stevens?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. First, I would say I have not made up my mind on this, and I'm listening to everyone who speaks. But you've made a couple of comments a couple of times that sort of concerned me. And I'm not an economist either, but you said that it will create more jobs and improve the economy. Well, maybe, but it also takes away jobs and it also takes away money from other folks, other Alaskans who are working. And how can you say that? And I just ask for clarification. Does it really create more jobs if you're taking jobs away from somebody and giving them to somebody else? Does it really improve the economy if you're taking money away from a cab and giving it to a Uber?
Certainly. Thank you for the question, Senator Stevens, through the chair. I think there's a few things that we can talk about there. First, and there's a study that we'll provide to the committee that actually looked at a pilot project done in Portland on that, you know, the effect that rideshare companies had on the taxi industry. And I'll provide that to the committee, but the essence of it is that what they found is that it actually tends to grow the pie a little bit. One of the main benefits of rideshare companies is that you are able to get a ride quickly. So as opposed to if you're having to wait an extended period of time for a bus, a taxi, a traditional form of transportation, you know, you might find a ride elsewhere. You might walk home. You might take another route. So it actually increases the volume of transportation services that happen within a city. The other thing, again, through the chair, Senator Stevens, I think that we can look at, and the industry and some of the folks calling to testify will talk about, is rideshare drivers have the flexibility of not having to have a long shift. They don't have to do an 8-hour shift in a cab, driving a bus. They can turn it on and off. And so what you're doing is growing the ranks of Alaska's transportation industry, you know, 10 hours a week at a time. If you look at some of the drivers that work for companies such as Lyft, they're everything from college students, people new to this country, retirees, people who are looking for a new job, retired CEOs. I mean, it's a big mix. So we'd be happy to provide some information that kind of looks at the cause and effect of having these companies introduced into an economy.
Thank you, Weston. Thank you, Madam Chair. I look forward to receiving that report.
Sorry.
Thank you. And I also wanted to mention that it's my understanding that working in one of these industries is one of the few jobs that an active duty military member can actually have. And when I experienced Uber, my driver was in the military. So just another point. I don't know if that will come out today, but I thought that was interesting because Alaska has so many members who are serving in the military. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, have the Uber app on my phone because when I do travel outside, it seems like there's Uber in every state except Alaska. And it's my understanding that 47 states do have Uber, so we're one of the three that isn't quite there yet. But I know we've tried this before, Madam Chair and Weston. We had a bill a couple years ago before us, bill similar to this. What has changed in this bill versus that bill we had a couple years ago?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, thank you for that question. As these companies have really taken root and gone to work in various states, it's also brought stakeholders together around model language and best practices. So what we're seeing in the bill today, I know the chair will talk a little bit about even some further tweaks that we'll be making with a committee substitute, is a lot of this is a good deal of model language where we've brought together the insurance industry, rideshare companies. We've taken examples from various states and found kind of the right nexus of how we can have insurance define these drivers as independent contractors, and put the safeguards in place to ensure that it's a good, sound policy. So that's one of the main changes. I think you are also seeing, Senator Meyer, that this is a growing industry quite a bit. It's especially in a challenging recession time like we're facing in Alaska. There's a great deal of opportunity to grow. The popularity of this is increasing. It's also spread around the world. There are equivalents of rideshare companies in Southeast Asia, in Europe, and I'll let the industry speak to that. So it's a growing model that's creating more and more solutions, not even in urban areas, but as Senator McKinnon mentions, it complements a lot of the changes that are happening to public transportation infrastructure. It helps serve kind of far-sprung areas. And so you're seeing it start to complement even some of the reforms that Anchorage is doing with its own taxi market. And so I think those are kind of the changes we're seeing, and the bill reflects finding that right policy to capture it.
Senator Meyer?
Well, thank you, Weston. Thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking of the Anchorage market, where I'm from, as is the chairman and the minority leader here next to me, we had Uber on a trial basis, I think, for 2 or 3 months, and I don't recall the taxicab folks, you know, saying that they were losing business because of that. And in fact, when Uber went away in Anchorage, I got phone calls saying, "What happened to Uber?" So, what? Maybe you can explain what happened there as well.
Certainly, thank you, Senator Meyer, for that question. Uber first came to Anchorage in September of 2014. I think what we found, and again, I'll talk about a few things that occurred, is in a lot of ways this is a new platform and technology that state governments are still kind of trying to assess and get their hands around. It's something kind of brand new that we hadn't seen before. That platform and using technology and basically connecting private drivers, you hadn't really seen that in transportation policy, you know, prior to this past decade. So what happened is, you know, I'll actually let the representatives of Uber, and we have one of their legal counsels here to actually kind of spell out the fine print. But ultimately, in working with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, as well as the Municipality of Anchorage, Uber decided to pause its operations in Anchorage and then seek changes in state law that would clarify the issues of workers' compensation, insurance, and just make sure that there was clarity across the board to allow them to operate. So while they first came up here in 14, there was a variety of discussions on the state and municipal level. Again, certainly a variety of benefits that we saw, but again, this bill is mostly brought forward to provide that clarity for state and local governments and the industry to, you know, again, have the right coverage and have the pieces in place and a level playing field so they can operate here. That's the intent of the bill.
Senator Meyer?
Okay.
Senator Gardner?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have two very different questions, and the first one is thinking about the justification or the description of need that started with Senator McKinnon and talking about people who live out in the valley or someplace coming into town or coming back from the airport and not being able to get a taxi driver who would agree to go out that far. And I guess I just want to hear confirmation on the record. Can an Uber driver refuse such a fare?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, if I may, just to be crystal clear on the record, if I could defer that actually to the industry.
Okay.
To speak to your statement of need, one of the things that we've found in researching this and talking with the involved stakeholders, one of the things that it solves, it's sort of like the carpooling or commuting on demand model. For instance, if you were going to take a cab from downtown Anchorage and wanting to go out to Chugiak, that taxi driver or so forth would then have to kind of deadhead back to Anchorage to resume his commerce. What these models of rideshare companies provide is a way where which you can track or you can connect with someone who might be commuting in from Eagle River or might be commuting back to Chugiak. And so they're already on one-way treks, and you can self-select that way. So that's kind of the mechanism and one of the benefits that this model provides. But we'll get the specifics for you on that.
Thank you. And I do understand that is a benefit. I just would still like to hear from Uber if a driver can simply say no thank you and get somebody else. And then my other question is a little more complex. You know, in thinking about this bill, people brought up concerns about insurance and background checks and driving records and drug records and confidentiality of data and the safety of the vehicle itself. And I think all of those can be addressed relatively simply. The remaining issue, as I see it, is the issue of workers' comp and unemployment insurance, which really is at the heart of the employment terms. And it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that what this bill basically does is declare by definition that transportation network companies are not hiring employees but working with independent contractors. And I'd be interested in hearing from you or from the Department of Labor, whenever it's appropriate, sort of a little discussion of what makes somebody an independent contractor and absent defining them here in statute, because I'm always a little bit anxious about changing statute to fit one incident or one person or one company or something like that, and just kind of a discussion of what that distinction is.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Gardner, we'd be happy to talk about that and work more with your office on it. Senate Bill 14, as introduced, and the concept it works with is that rideshare drivers are independent contractors in that they operate their own vehicles, they work on their own time, they can work for one rideshare company, they can work for the competition of a rideshare company. And so that format and the fact that they're using mostly their own, basically all their own equipment and wherewithal, just meeting standards that company providing the app insists on. What these companies are is basically a technology company that just connects yourself and I, or a driver and a rider, and what they're providing is just that platform. There are a variety of kind of safeguards and standards and customer service that go into it, but primarily it's just the connection service. So what ends up happening, the end of the transaction, and one of the things that makes, you know, rideshare companies cheaper in many ways, is that 80% of, you know, what is paid on the fare goes to the driver, 20% of it goes to, you know, in this instance, Uber as a technology fee. And so it's a platform concept that's kind of at the heart of the rideshare discussion, and we look forward to talking with your office more about that.
Thank you, and if I might just respond, the price setting is not done by the drivers, though. That's done by the company and can fluctuate depending on the need and the number of applicants and the time of day and things like that. So,
Yep. Through the chair, Senator Gardner, yes, we'll have Uber up next, and they can talk about kind of the pricing and the demand models that go there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your question, Senator Gardner. Next, Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Thank you, Weston. Good job overviewing. I was an early adopter of Uber. I think it's been about 5 years. And I also have the Lyft app on my phone. And interestingly, every time I've used either Lyft or Uber, I always talk to the driver and find a little bit about them. I have yet to find anyone who does it full time. And often it's because they're driving, I've had several that are on their way home from work, and they decide that they're going to turn their app on and see if anybody needs a ride going that direction, maybe get a little gas money. So I'm very interested, as Senator McKinnon is, for her community, because in the Mat-Su Valley, we're very spread out, and there is a need for an additional form of transportation. It's also, I believe, going to be really helpful for our area for getting to and from the airport. We're even farther than Eagle River is. And I think that I understand a cab is around $80. I believe, I don't know, because it'll be by formula as far as the transportation network companies figuring it out. But I think what is going to happen, it's not going to be somebody who's just sitting around Palmer waiting for somebody that needs to ride to the airport, but it's going to be somebody that's heading into Costco, they're heading in to go to a job, they're heading to the Fifth Avenue Mall, and they're going to turn their app on. And so I think that the cost, there's going to be a real cost savings And then when they're ready to come back to the valley, they'll turn it back on and see if anyone wants to come back. That's been my experience as I've used it around the country. Most of the drivers I've spoken with are doing it in addition to another job in less than 10 hours. That's been my experience. And I did want to just say, and I hope it's okay if I'm making a few comments because I do support the bill, is that I do think it does grow the pie. And one of the reasons is I've also had this discussion with the drivers. In some of the large cities, the younger generation is choosing not to own a vehicle. And so they're using the transport network companies. So the need is growing as well as these types of opportunities. But I do have a question, Madam Chair, and it is on page six, the bottom of page six. It's requiring the driver to carry proof of coverage. And I recall that we, a few years ago, passed legislation here in this building to allow us to have electronic form of proof of insurance coverage, so we didn't have to worry about printing it out and making sure we had, you know, the most recent six-month coverage in our glove compartment, but we could pull it up on our phones. So what I'm wondering is, when we say shall carry proof of coverage, would that electronic form be adequate, or are we asking the drivers for additional to actually carry hard copies?
Thank you. Thank you, through the chair, Senator Hughes. Thank you for that question. With your permission, I'd actually like to consult legislative legal and just make sure I get the fine print right for you on that one.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hughes?
And just a comment. I'm all about moving to the 21st century, so I'm fine if it's electronic. I think it would make sense if they could carry it electronically.
Madam Chair? Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Yeah, and if I might just add something to that point, if it is electronic, it's really up to date. There's nothing to stop somebody from getting the insurance card and canceling it the next day, and the card says it's good for 6 months. But if they're using an electronic form and they've canceled it, it will reflect that.
Absolutely, and Madam Chair, Senator Gardner, that's one thing I think we'll hear from the industry is having this digitalized, that also allows them to help ensure compliance of coverage and other things of drivers throughout the network. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, committee members, for your questions. We're going to next hear from Mitchell Matthews, the Senior Operations Manager for Pacific Northwest, the Uber company, for his company, and also Nancy Allred, the Senior Counsel for Uber. And we'll take a brief at ease to allow them to get their PowerPoint and video ready for the committee. To order, and again this afternoon we are looking at Senate Bill 14, the Let's Ride Alaska Act. It's the first hearing for the bill, and with us we have Mitchell Matthews and Nancy Allred, and I will turn it over to you for your presentation, and then we'll follow up with questions from committee members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Nancy Chung Allred, and I am Senior Regulatory Counsel for Uber Technologies, Inc. I have with me Mitchell Matthews, who is the Senior Operations Manager for Uber for the Pacific Northwest, and we are pleased to be here to support Senate Bill 14. A little bit about our service. Uber is a technology company that provides a digital network to connect riders to drivers. Our riders are able to use their smartphones to request a safe and reliable ride at the touch of a button. Our independent contractor drivers value the flexibility of being able to work when, where, and how they want, their ability to work with a competitor, and 88% of our drivers tell us that they do it, that they work with us because they like the flexibility. Our company was founded in 2009 and has since expanded worldwide. We are currently operating in 47 states and 541 cities across the globe. We've provided over 2 billion safe rides globally and provided flexible earning opportunities for to drivers all around the world. Madam Chair, we are here to support Senate Bill 14, which provides the appropriate amount of safeguards for consumers while allowing us a predictability in the market to launch our flagship product in Alaska. It includes insurance language that has been adopted in over 40 states and has been approved and adopted by the National Conference of Insurance Legislators, or NCOIL. Our background checks are performed by a third party that has been approved by the National Association of Professional Background Screeners. It involves a motor vehicle check and involves a review of the Department of Justice's U.S. Sex Offender National website. the unique flexibility of the product would flourish in Alaska. We think Uber would be a great transportation option in Alaska for tourists and Alaskans alike. Many of the people that we've spoken with assume that we would only operate in Anchorage, which wouldn't be the case. We've hired a new general manager that oversees Alaska, and he has seen a lot of success in rural areas of Montana and Idaho and Washington, and we think that he could replicate these successes in Washington as well. As Weston noted, Madam Chair, over 20,000 Alaskans have the app downloaded in Alaska, and over 60,000 people have opened the Uber app in Alaska in the past year looking for a ride. Whether it's tourists or residents, we think, Madam Chair and Senators, that it is time to bring this app to Alaska and allow the expansion of transportation options. And speaking of the app, though, I do want to turn the time over to my colleague Mitchell, who is going to walk you through some of the features of the Uber app, and then we would be pleased to take some of your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. First, let me thank you for the opportunity to be here. I myself grew up on the North Coast, just south of Ketchikan across Dixon Entrance, so it's great to be back. It's also not too often I have to put sunscreen on my head in February in the North Coast, so thanks for holding off the weather for us. Over the next few moments, I'm going to share a short video which will walk through the Uber app and kind of give you a better experience of what riders see when they use it to dispatch a ride. So you see a walkthrough of the app there, Madam Chair, Senators. What you did see was a few screens that would pop up for riders to see some information on, specifically about who they were matched to, how the trip will take place, and where they're going. So the first screen that you had seen was the economy or the product selection screen, and it shows the Uber app and the prices that came up, as well as the estimated time for dispatch or for their destination. On the screen, you can see the products that we have, so UberX and UberXL. These delineate occupancy of vehicles and type of vehicles that a rider would expect. It further includes information about their billing and occupancy values associated with those vehicles. So 1 to 4 being UberX, there's 4 seats available because there's one driver in the car on the 5th. This information is the driver contact and trip details. This is the information that is surfaced to riders about the driver that will be picking them up in the vehicle. It includes contact details, which are anonymized and temporary in nature once the trip is done. It gives the ability for you to know that Jill, who's driving a Honda Civic with license plate, will be picking you up. And it gives you details about the trip you're on, as well as the time that you expect to be at your arrival. Just below the bar there, it also shows a share status, and that means that you can share your status on your trip with another individual via email so they know when you would be arriving at the destination that you chose. Lastly, it includes payment information. So you see the payment that you will be paying for this trip. It allows you to confirm which payment method you'll be using, in this case, the MasterCard. And lastly, much to the chagrin of many parents, it's a split fare feature, which allows you to split your fare with your parents or your children's children across the world to bear the cost of some of your trip. And lastly, this gives you some information about your driver that's while you're on trip or while you're waiting for the driver to arrive at the destination that you've requested from. It includes that contact details, who it is, the information about the vehicle to be matched, and where it actually is en route or where you are en route as well, providing some enhanced features.
Mitchell, one of the features that I found really enjoyable actually was when you get to your destination, you just get out of the car. There's no
fumbling for your purse, or if you're at the airport or you were just at the airport, you don't have to look around for your wallet and then, you know, try to figure out how much your fare is. I mean, it's as simple as thanks a lot, and then you rate your driver and your driver rates you. I know that my driver's name was Mia, and I gave her all the stars that she could get, and she gave me all the stars that I could get as a passenger, because the drivers need to be safe also, so they're not going to want to pick up a passenger that has been rated unruly, or, you know, for some reason a person that you wouldn't want in your car. And likewise, as a passenger, you want to be in a situation where you're safe too. And so I just wanted to bring that up because it didn't appear in your presentation. Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just follow up on that. I know an example you had there, the Honda Civic. That driver had a 4.8 stars. So what is the max, 5?
Through the chair to Senator Meyer, yes. Okay. 5-star rating is the scale that is used.
Okay. So, and then you had the right to reject that driver, correct?
Through the chair, yes.
I mean, if they were only 3 stars and you want a 5-star driver, okay.
That's correct.
Might have to wait a while, though, but mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And, any further questions? Senator Hughes?
Yeah, I wanted to ask 2 questions. One's real quick. The average wait time, I don't know if you have calculated that, and if you might know what the average wait, well, I guess you probably, it would be different areas of the state. And then the second question I have has to do with how the rates go up and down depending on the demand, and how that's calculated based on traffic and available drivers, requesters. And then that sounds like it's pretty complicated, maybe part of your technology. And would that same technology work in a place that, in a rural place where you don't have the heavy traffic and you have fewer drivers and users?
Yes, through the chair, just to answer your first question, Senator Hughes, in many ways the Uber product is shaped by the communities that we serve. So it works very well in rural communities as well as highly dense urban communities in nature. We would have ETAs dependent on how many drivers are on the app, where they are in relation to the requester, as well as how much demand exists within that market. And so those ETAs can be shaped by that. So if you live out in a rural area on acreages or acreages, there may be some roads that dead end at someone's property, and so you kind of have to take a bit of a milk route around that, and that will shape how quickly people can get there. In cities, we generally have to have a higher density of drivers, and the ETAs are definitely much shorter in that context. Through the chair to Senator Hughes for your second question on the dynamic pricing side. So we have a per minute per mile base fare that is published to drivers so they understand which they will be which compensation they receive for the trip, as well as the commission and rate structure associated with that. And then for riders, we provide a estimated fare up front, so they see that fare transparency as well. You had made a comment previously, Madam Chair, about the ease of getting in and out of the vehicle. There was no cash exchange, and what we have found in many places, and feedback we receive from riders and drivers, or riders specifically, is that they really appreciate the fare transparency and that upfront pricing associated with it. Now, that pricing does change when there's periods of high demand. It's market-based pricing, so in, you know, large events or in periods where there's high demand, whether it's New Year's Eve, 4th of July, when fireworks get out, the price may change just based on the density of riders and the number of drivers that are available on that side. And that is built into our technology.
Any further questions? I did have a question about Uber Kids and Uber Women. Could you just briefly describe what those aspects are to your company, and do you foresee them being in Alaska if this bill were to pass?
Yes, to the chair. This is my favorite thing to talk about Uber. There's so many features. We have Uber Teen right now, which is where we're piloting in a number of markets, individuals that are 13 to 18, where they can take trips. It's enhanced features built into the app, so a parent could see where their child is at that period of time when they dispatch that ride. And we've noticed that that has been a demand that has been asked for both by drivers and riders, where they get some enhanced features associated with where their child is en route and the confirmation that they are at that destination. We've got our 1 million women pledge, where we work to provide an opportunity for 1 million women for businesses, and we're working pretty actively at that. And we have groups within our own organization and individuals on the actual Uber corporate team that work diligently on that. One of the senators also mentioned the military, and we have a lot of military members that use the app in their periods of transition when they're looking to bridge income gaps, when they're either moving from one state to another or when somebody is deployed overseas. We also have a really great feature as well, which I think is particularly important to communities, is we have a number of drivers from the hearing impaired community that have enhanced features in the driver app that inform riders that they're going to be picked up by someone who has a hearing disability. And that's exciting because that has been a traditionally underserved community from a technology as well as a public support sector for meaningful employment. And now all these individuals, whether it's the teen driver, the woman driver, or the individual with a hearing disability, all of these people are their own business owners too. So they have the ability and flexibility to work when, how, and what they would like, where what they would like. They get a 1099 at the end of the year, and they use their own vehicles and their own equipment for that period too.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Yeah, I have a couple questions I'm sort of curious about. Is one, how does surge pricing and the fluctuations that are part of that compare to, say, taxi pricing? I mean, when you get into a taxi, I know if I take a taxi from my house to the airport, it's about $20 with a tip. But depends on the time of day. At 2 a.m., it's, you know, 18 or something. Mm-hmm. And do you fluctuate throughout every day, or how often does it fluctuate for you?
Through the chair to Senator Gardner, it generally depends on the conditions of the day, the time of day, and again, how the community shapes the product. So if there's a city with a high density of businesses in a downtown core, take Seattle as an example, at the commute hours, pricing may be a bit higher because there's higher demand for those drivers. This gives the incentive for those drivers to be there to work at that time, and they're rewarded for that because the market price for a ride is higher. It allows those drivers to gain more at those periods of time, and riders as well are informed of the price up front of whether or not they would like to take that ride. It's also a component of how we grow the pie. There's this product and the Uber products that exist complement many other transportation networks within a community, whether that's existing taxi or it's for hire if they have a split between the two, or city buses or city transportation. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. You know, there's some of the concern is for the safety and well-being of the passengers, but also of the drivers. So, and I just want to make certain I understand, can drivers refuse a particular fare? If they go to pick somebody up and realize this person is very intoxicated, they don't want them in their cab, or they don't want to go where the person actually is going to go. They realize that it's further than they thought or something like that. Are they free as independent contractors to say sorry?
Through the chair to Senator Gardner, that is correct. They are free to decline a ride if they choose to do so.
Even when they're there?
Even when they're there, yes. We have a very strong record of serving underserved communities, underserved neighborhoods, areas where there has been traditional lack of infrastructure to provide these. But as an independent contractor, they have the full right as a business owner to refuse the service if they so choose.
Thank you. And one more.
Senator Gardner?
I'm just trying to think of the distinction between a business owner, fully independent, and an employee. Do your drivers have business licenses?
Through the chair to Senator Gardner, in some jurisdictions, they do have business licenses, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if, Mitchell, we go back to my original question, I mean, what I know about economics was in a college required class, Economy 101, but it makes sense to me that if you give a job to one person, you take it from someone else, you're not creating more jobs. If you give money to somebody else, take it from somebody else, you're not creating more money in the economy. So the response I heard was that it grows the pie, and I've heard you say grow the pie. So I guess I'll ask you to prove it to me. And what I'm saying is that everything you say is very logical, except to me that one point. And if that is not a selling point, maybe we should take it out of the argument.
Through the chair to Senator Stevens, please correct me if I've interpreted the question incorrectly in this. But the Uber platform, when it enters a market and drivers sign up, We have a number of individuals that are part of the traditional for-hire industry that also use the for-hire app. And so we in many ways market to riders to grow the pie on our own, also through word of mouth and organic growth. A number of individuals will take trips that haven't necessarily existed. So there is the underlying effort or that underlying need for trips. However, when there's not enough vehicles to serve it or not enough vehicles to serve a community, those trips don't get served. And so in growing the pie, we grow the pie through enhancing service and opportunities in it. And in that effort itself, we also bring in interesting platforms and products to underserved demographics or underserved areas of communities, be it Uber Teen or working with restaurant partners or hotel partners or elderly care facilities. We're able to serve all of those and meet that excess demand that exists in a market.
Senator Stevens?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions of committee members? Well, I want to thank you again for making the presentation, and we will take a brief at ease. Next, we will be hearing from Marie Marks, the Director of Workers' Compensation with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. This committee is called back to order. Again, we are hearing about Senate Bill 14, Alaska's Let's Ride Alaska Act is what we're calling it. And with us now we have Marie Marks, the Director of Workers' Compensation from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Welcome. And she is here to answer questions from committee members. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. And I'm not sure if you're the right person to ask this, but can you talk about the difference between an employee and a contractor?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, for the record, again, my name is Marie Marks. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. I would absolutely be happy to talk about the definition in the context of workers' compensation, as every agency that regulates employer-employee relationships does have a little bit different definition. But I'd be happy to talk about the definition of workers' compensation in the context of employee-employer relationship. So just a kind of an overview for workers' comp, every employer that has one or more employees has a duty to cover that employee for workplace injuries. And every employee who gets injured on the job is entitled to benefits that result in the need for medical care or time off work. And so that's what workers' compensation does, is provide that framework. Otherwise, if that's not in place, it leaves the employer open to lawsuits, and it subjects potentially the employee to substantial, you know, medical bills if they don't have their own coverage. So that's what workers' compensation really is for. Each instance of whether an employee should be considered an employee is a case-by-case determination. And it's right now, under current law, it's a multi-factor balancing test. And frankly, most jurisdictions have a multi-factor test. I mean, some jurisdictions have 20 factors. We have about 6 factors that we look at. And it's a balancing test, meaning there's no one factor that's determinative. If a dispute arises before in a workplace injury about whether someone is in fact an employee or not, if the parties can't resolve it, it'll go before the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board. And the board will look at all these different factors: who controlled the work, who provided the main tools for the job, who set the hours, how are they paid, and we'll look at this and make a determination on whether or not someone is an employee.
Senator Gardner, any follow-up questions?
Thank you. Is the manner of compensation a factor in the sense that we've been told that if you're a taxi driver, you handle the money and at the end of the day make an exchange or at the end of a given period, and if you're an Uber driver, you never touch the money? Does that make a difference? And I ask this in part because my husband was a contractor and got a check on a monthly basis. So
one of the factors that is considered in the workers' compensation context is how the person is paid for the work and control. And so through the chair, Senator Casado, through the chair, Senator Gardner, that question relates to not only how someone is paid, but who controls it. The issue of employee status has never been determined in Alaska regarding Uber or similar type technology companies. The board has not ever made a determination on that. And so hypothetically, we could look at that factor, and if it's decided in favor and other factors are decided in favor, the board could say, well, because taxi companies really have more control over how they're paid, it's my understanding that they pay, you know, a set fee to access the dispatch services, they could fine them the employee. The board could look at the factors and decide otherwise, and I think other jurisdictions have kind of weighed this issue are all, I think, looking at this issue of payment. But absolutely, the taxi driver structure, it's my understanding, is set up so the drivers are paying and essentially accessing that dispatch services to pay a set rate for that, is my understanding. Whereas it's my understanding with the Uber application, that access is not a set fee to access that app. It's really an ongoing, you're paid for each ride that you give.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my understanding about what we're doing here is by definition in statute saying that drivers for a transportation network are by definition not employees. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, we're still looking into looking into the SB 14, but the way it's currently written now is that it would not call them independent contractors or employees. What it does is it exempts them from the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. So right now there are 10 categories of persons, of individuals. We don't exempt business types. We exempt individuals. 10 categories currently that are just exempted from the Act. Doesn't mean they're employees. It doesn't mean they're independent contractors. The Act just does not apply to them. Commercial fishermen are one. Commercial fishermen have their own separate type of coverage that apply, the fisherman's fund. So they would just be exempted from the Act. So if an injury occurred, they would not be seeking workers' compensation benefits. They wouldn't be entitled to those benefits.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So would a driver be expected to pay those benefits on their own, or they just don't have to participate at all?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, it's something that the Alaska Workers' Compensation System would not be involved in, and so it really would be up then to the parties or other parts of the legislation to address how an employee may protect themselves from incurring medical bills or incurring costs if they get an accident that injure passengers or bystanders, and how an employer, you know, could protect themselves potentially from liability, from being sued and so forth. And so that's really between, if they're exempted from the Act, the workers' compensation steps away from it, and it's hopefully dealt with through other provisions of the law. And it is my understanding that other states have been addressing this in different ways, maybe through liability coverage. I don't know how many states have addressed independent contractor status or employee status in the context of labor laws or workers' compensation specifically. I mean, I don't think that that's uniform, though I think most states have some legislation relating to Uber and for liability insurance. I'm not sure how many actually have addressed independent contractor status, because I know it can be a tricky issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for asking the same question again and again, but I think it's a fascinating one. And since you are the Department of Workforce Development, my question to you is this workforce development, when in fact it appears that someone is entering the market with a new job and someone is leaving the department with an old job. Is it workforce development or not?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I know that we're Department of Labor, and I know that really our focus has been on putting Alaskans in jobs, specifically Alaskans in jobs, and developing that labor. So whether I guess the the administration is still looking at this and doesn't have a stance on the economic impact at this point, and really just has no position on the economic impact. What we've been focusing on is the labor part and those, you know, what protections or what is there to ensure that if someone is an employee, that they get the protections of an employee. If someone is not an employee, that really is something that the Alaska Department of Labor then would not be involved in that discussion. And so I think that the question here is, would they be exempted completely just from the act? Absolutely, and that's what we've been focusing on, Senator Stevens.
Thank you. And Senator Stevens, we will have up next Fred Parity, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development, and I'm sure he's heard the question, and so we'll have the Commerce Department look at that too.
I'm not going to ask it again.
Are there any further questions? Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We'll take a brief at ease while we give Deputy Commissioner Parity time to come forward. Labor and Commerce Committee members. Next with us, we have Deputy Commissioner Fred Parity with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And I understand you have a few comments to make, and then we'll open it up for committee questions. And following Deputy Commissioner Parity, we will take a brief at ease, and then we'll begin the public testimony. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like to begin by expressing Commissioner Laddick's regret. He and Division Director Lori Wing-Hire are in Washington, D.C., working on the Affordable Care Act issues and Alaska's 1332 waiver, and thus are unable to be here today, devolving this assignment to me. The mission of the Department of Commerce, as you all know, is to promote a healthy economy, strong communities, and protect consumers in Alaska. Senate Bill 14 encourages transportation network companies to operate in Alaska, and in our view does provide necessary provisions for protecting consumers from an insurance perspective. Senate Bill 14 clarifies the commercial insurance requirements necessary for a transportation network company. It allows insurers to exclude coverage offered under personal vehicle policies. From an insurance perspective, this is the crux of the bill. Insurers have uniformly filed in Alaska and other states endorsements in their auto insurance lines that specifically exclude coverage for drivers who are driving while engaged with or signed into a transportation network company platform. Some insurers have filed amended policy forms to change the policy itself to reflect that transportation network coverage is not included in the insurance contract for a personal vehicle. At this time, the Division of Insurance has not received any filings for adding transportation network coverage for Alaska insured drivers, either under personal or commercial auto insurance. Senate Bill 14 will allow that to occur. At this time, the Division of Insurance has not received filings from insurers willing to write coverage for TNC activities in Alaska because it's not expressly authorized. Thus, there have been no insurers filing with the state advising us that they are adopting the currently approved authorized insurance service office, ISO, that is the major rating organization for those forms and rates. But we anticipate, should the bill in fact pass and become law after signature by the governor, that those next steps would then occur. Transportation network drivers will need to then ensure that their auto insurance coverage is both compliant with Alaska requirements and that they have an understanding of their insurance exclusions. The service of transportation network companies is widespread in virtually all states, as you've heard today. There is strong interest among both tourists visiting Alaska and local residents of the state to have the choice to use the services of TNCs if they so desire. Currently, Uber, the largest transportation network, operates in all states except Alaska and Wyoming, and apparently South Dakota. They were briefly here but ceased operations after due to issues raised related to then regulations governing the Alaska's Workers' Compensation Act. Finally, this legislation would have zero fiscal impact on the Division of Insurance. Again, our specific concern with the bill is resolving the question of coverage under personal and commercial auto insurance. I'd be ready to, glad to answer questions.
Thank you very much for being here today and for providing those comments to the committee. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure, Ms. Brady, that this is your bailiwick, but how do we know that either a taxi cab driver or a Uber has insurance? How is that, what's our involvement in that?
The, I believe I have that here, Madam Chairman, if I might have a moment. The bills, Madam Chairman, SB 14 specifically requires that a transportation network driver or the company on behalf of the driver shall maintain primary automobile insurance that recognizes the driver as a transportation company driver, and that insurance covers the driver while the driver is logged into a digital network the transportation network company provides. The driver shall carry proof of coverage with the driver at all times during the use for a vehicle in connection with that digital network from the transportation company.
Senator Stevens, follow-up question? Okay. Any further questions of the Deputy Commissioner? Okay, well, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. So now we'll begin the public testimony phase of the committee, and I appreciate those people who've been waiting patiently online to testify. In an effort to hear from everyone who would like to testify, I respectfully ask that you keep your comments to 2 minutes, and then I will, if any committee members have any questions of the testifiers, please let me know, but we'll just be moving through the list. So first, off, calling in from Anchorage, or at the Anchorage LIO, Nikki Rose. Nikki, if you want to state your name for the record and let us hear your comments.
Good morning. Thank you so much for hearing from the public testimony. I'm a Sand Lake resident, and I am calling today to support the expanding of the Uber and Lyft program in Anchorage. Hopefully, we'll expand to Alaska. And currently, my husband and I are Anchorage residents, and we've lived here our whole lives, except for 3 years other than Seattle. And when we were in Seattle, we had no car. We didn't have a vehicle, and so we had to rely on public transportation. And when we did, we found it very difficult to commute to work and school and whatnot. And when we moved back to Anchorage, we had one vehicle that we had purchased, and we relied heavily on that vehicle to and from school and to and from work. And right now, with the economy the way it is, we would like to see Uber and Lyft be able to operate in Anchorage to lower costs to not only the consumers of public transportation, but also because our bus systems in the municipality of Anchorage are being limited. Our bus routes are going to be reduced dramatically, so we won't be able to take the public transportation right now that is currently offered to our community. But we would also like to see that Uber and Lyft are welcome here for economic reasons. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and currently I can see a great benefit to me to be able to operate the vehicle we do have and the insurance we do pay and make it work for us. And that economic freedom would allow me to continue to stay home with my son, who's a very young child, and he depends on me for his needs. But while his dad's at work during the day, and I'm home with him, it's a good, reliable income source for us in the evenings or on the weekends when we are able to share the vehicle. So we would like to see that opportunity granted to a lot of individuals. We also have individuals in the San Lake area who are disabled, and right now our city is having budget shortfalls and unable to respond with the snow removal system. And so it's very difficult to walk. And for a young child like my son and for me to get around walking-wise, it's very difficult to walk our sidewalks, which aren't necessarily cleared right away. We had a big snowstorm just a few weeks ago, and it would have been nice just to be able to call another driver in the area to that was possibly going somewhere in order to allow us to go to where we needed to go for groceries or to get where we needed to go to different events. When we do have opportunity for fun date nights or whatnot, our transportation is limited. If we want to go out and have a good time, we do have to rely on where do we park downtown, where do we pay for parking downtown, and that can be extremely expensive for a family with one income. And so having opportunities to be able to call someone from our community would say, okay, so we're going downtown, we're leaving around 7, but anyone be able to pick us up and drive us for a small fee, that could also increase our chances of getting out and enjoying our city. And like I said, also for extra income for those busy weekends, Super Bowl's coming up, and for other events in the summer when downtown parking is extremely busy or getting to and from the airport, we would like to see the positive effects that having other options brings to Anchorage. Right now, our cab drivers are very limited in the wages that they can make, and because of that, the people that take the cabs are completely dependent on them, and the cab drivers are completely dependent on them. So if we were able to expand, it would be a better, fair wage for all involved to be able to afford the cost of living that is associated with living in Alaska with our gas prices and our budget shortfalls. So thank you for speaking to this issue, and I support SB 14.
Thank you, Nikki. Appreciate you calling in. Next, Ryan Kennedy, also calling in from Anchorage.
Hello?
Hello, Ryan. We can hear you.
Hi. Hi, my name is... So am I before the committee now?
Yes, you are.
Okay. My name is Ryan Kennedy. I'm here in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm sort of an activist on the taxi issue. I was behind the ballot initiative to open up the permitting in Anchorage, Alaska, which failed at the ballot. And failed at the ballot, but you know, I got outspent. I spent $500 and they spent probably $100,000. So I don't see it as any kind of defeat, really. I just want to. So I follow Anchorage. What's going on in Anchorage? The for hire transit market. I follow that very closely. And generally speaking, Anchorage is headed in that direction to opening up the taxi industry. Just recently in December. In December, the Anchorage Assembly, they passed an ordinance that would have basically it issues 15 new taxi cab permits per year for 5 years, and then at the end of the 5 years, they're just going to sit back and see what's going on. But I've also been in contact with the Assembly members, and it's my impression that they're going to have even more subsequent legislation with. Towards the general view of opening things up. And so I think this bill that you're considering would dovetail nicely with that because the transportation network company thing is kind of, I think, it's just the way of the future. And so, I mean, it's like inevitable. And if we're not, it's kind of like, I spent this summer down in California working in California because I work in construction and the economy is so horrible anyway. So I was down there and I took Uber a whole hell of a lot all the time it's just like it was kind of embarrassing to talk to people and say, you guys don't have Uber up in Alaska? Were you guys like in the third world or something? You know, you guys don't have that? I go, well, we got a taxi cartel that really protects its turf for, you know, tries to. So I think this whole transportation network company is a good thing, and I think we ought to get on board with it.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Next, we have William Weatherby calling in from King Salmon.
Hello, this is William Weatherby. I am in a remote part of Alaska, somewhat remote, and my experience with the taxi here is that it isn't always that reliable. I remember at the restaurant, a waitress got off work maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and needed a ride home. She used the taxi every day. But that particular evening, the taxi was closed for the night. They were just done giving rides. So she was without a ride completely. And if that can happen at 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night, it can happen at, you know, midnight or 2 in the morning when intoxicated people want to go home from the bars. A week or so ago, when it was cold out here, the taxi didn't run in the morning because their vehicle wouldn't start. So how many people were missing a ride to work or a ride to the store because the taxi's vehicle wouldn't start to the cold? I think that a situation like Uber or Lyft could really pick up the slack, and we could help each other out a lot easier. People could get a ride from someone they trusted more because of the process of getting an Uber or a Lyft driver certified. So I am in support of SB 14, and I hope you guys consider the more remote parts of Alaska and the benefits that we could have from this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, William. So just for those interested, we have about 30 minutes left in the committee, and we have 15 people signed up to testify. I'm going to go ahead and read the next three individuals so that you are can be ready. The final two people on the list are Beth Goldman and Marissa Freeman in Anchorage. If other individuals use up more than 2 minutes, unfortunately, we will have to depart the room. And so out of respect for everybody, if you could keep us close to 2 minutes, that would be really wonderful. So next we'll have Alex Tanu, followed by Stan Ekman here in the room in Juneau, and then Kevin Weston. Alex, go ahead and provide your testimony. It sounds like Alex may no longer be waiting, so next we will go to Stan Ekman here in Juneau. Welcome. And then following Stan, we'll have Kevin Weston.
Stan Ekman, Anchorage, Alaska, Yellow Cab.
Go ahead and provide your comments for the committee.
Okay. You know, George Bernard Shaw said that in the proposition of robbing Peter to pay Paul, Paul is a willing participant. In Anchorage, we've existed with a cab market since the municipality was formed in 1978, and that cab market was limited entry, and the permits were transferable. If you wanted to run a cab, you had to buy a permit. Those permits went up and down in price. Now Uber wants to come, and you know, if it was going to make the pie bigger, hey, I'd be dancing up and down, but you don't see anybody in the cab industry dancing up and down with joy for this, because it doesn't make the pie bigger. What it does is turn my career of 30 years into a hobby for somebody else. You know, it's the broken window fallacy all over again economically. If you break a window, yes, the glazier gets to make a window, but that baker doesn't get to spend that money towards a new car. There's an unintended economic consequence for everything that happens. And yeah, the pie will eventually get bigger. But in the meantime, you'll have a bunch of amateurs doing this. And if Uber doesn't decide to live up to what it said it would do, and you kick them out, who's going to take their place? This is a problem that's happening in San Francisco right now. What do you do? If they decimate the cab industry, who do you replace them with? You know, this is a plug-and-play type situation. You just can't one day decide that you want Uber, and then Uber says, well, we're not going to insure the way you want us to. and you say, oh, you can't do that, and they just say, we're going away, bye-bye. And there's nobody else to replace them with, because that cab industry that they came in on is no longer able to do that. And on the insurance rigs, I would ask the question, is that driver insured commercially on his personal insurance? Because if he's only insured when he has a passenger in the car, and he kills somebody driving to go pick up a trip, I guarantee you his insurance company is not going to want to cover him, which is standard $50,000 and $100,000. And does he have to have the $300,000 that I have to run a taxi in Anchorage? I had that at all times. That 24 hours a day, that vehicle's insured for $300,000. It costs about $6,000 a year. And I don't anticipate Uber drivers paying that much for it. And about the Uber's employee-employee relationship, when's the last time you bought insurance for somebody who, that's not your employee? I think that infers an employer-employee relationship. They're buying the million-dollar insurance policy for that driver. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Stan. Appreciate you coming to testify today. Next, we have Kevin Rustin, also here in Juneau. Following Kevin, we'll have Ryan McKee, Dave O'Malley, and then Bronson Fry, all calling in from Anchorage. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin Reston. I'm a cab driver for Alaska Yellow Cab in Anchorage. I would just like to speak, and I certainly don't want to sound like a screed here, and I apologize. I don't mean to disparage the people who came up from Uber today. I don't know them personally at all, and I certainly hope they don't take my comments as a remark against them. I will say this company and other TNC companies have not been good corporate citizens. They hold themselves above the law, which I certainly know the folks here on this committee are very knowledgeable people, and they're aware of their past histories in some cases. Even since the time of Magna Carta, the king is not above the law. To think that you could come in and act and basically feel that you can direct and not necessarily lobby for changes, but feel like you'll become a fait accompli once you get into a place, really kind of shows their behavior. They've gone in and decimated the industry as it exists now. That's not to say that people don't want the innovation and the changes that are necessary, all right, but they underserve certain populations. You're not creating jobs here. I would go with some of the students. I have questions about it. I don't think it's enhancement. It's displacement. You're creating serfs, not jobs. 10 hours a day is the average that an Uber driver drives. At that point, that may be because they can't get enough work for it to be there. The other thing I clearly have a problem with is their disregard for concerns that the city had in Anchorage over safety issues. And I say specifically, it's basically a pathway of deregulation. These cars are unmarked. I know that they're saying that they can recognize an Uber, but as other cities have seen, as more and more people have these type of companies in there, people pull up to bars, they recognize, like, oh, yeah, that's a cab that I took 2 weeks, but the person is not logged into the system anymore. And people in alcohol make bad decisions, and I will say this, and it's something that's been known across the whole state, we do not need one missing room in Anchorage. Every step that you can take to ensure the safety of the people that are at bars, all right, and at other places in the state, I say that as a single dad. And I thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here, Kevin. Next, Ryan McKee in Anchorage.
Hi. This is Ryan McKee from Anchorage, testifying on my behalf. So thank you for giving us a chance to talk about this issue, to kind of address some of the concerns the previous person had about people getting into wrong cars and whatnot. Uber does a very good job of making sure that doesn't happen. When your car arrives on your phone, you have a picture of the driver, the car, and the license plate. And the driver is always supposed to ask when you get in if you are the person that actually requested the ride. And if they don't, you definitely can ask them, so this is for, is this for, and so and so. So the idea that they're, just these ghost cabs and people just walk into them and disappear, that doesn't really happen. And most of them, as far as I've seen from the Ubers and Lyfts I've taken, they've got the Uber sticker as well to indicate that they are an Uber driver or a Lyft driver. And then to address the concerns, Senator Stevens, that you had about growing the pie, a lot of people choose not to take cabs because they're very expensive. Living up on the south side, if I ever wanted to go downtown, it would be round trip, probably anywhere from $40 to $50, and it would usually take about 20 minutes or so before the cab actually got there. So a lot of people decide to carpool. Unfortunately, a lot of people also decide to go down with the idea of grabbing a cab on the way back. But either there aren't enough cabs, because at bar break, anybody can tell you that trying to get a cab is very difficult. And so a lot of people do make the decision to just drive home drunk. Thus, our drinking and driving rates here in Alaska are pretty high. Compare those to other cities where Uber is present. Mothers Against Drunk Driving has actually been real vocal about the fact that in those cities, the DUI rates have dropped dramatically. I think Austin just banned Uber again, and after about 3 years of continuous decline in DUI rates, after about 6 months of Uber being banned, the rates were right back up to where they were. So I fully support this. I think that Alaska does need to have Uber. Clearly other states are falling in line, and I think this would be a real benefit to our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Next we have Dave O'Malley, then Bronson Fry, followed by Eric Grant. Dave, are you online?
Yes, I am. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my name is Dave O'Malley, and over the years I have been an outspoken advocate for fairness and common sense in the Anchorage taxicab industry. I have also been the first Uber driver here in Anchorage in 2015. I have an extensive background in several aspects of transportation and have been openly critical of the dysfunction and corruption that is prevalent in the Anchorage taxi industry. For the last 30 years, the industry and public have literally been held hostage by a small group of greedy individuals known as the Anchorage Taxicab Permit Owners Association. Through their attorney, lobbyist, and public relations firm, they have aggressively fought to keep the status quo, which is in contrast with the best interests of the state, uni, taxi driving public, and the industry in general. The main interest has always been to keep the ever-increasing value of their permits. The permits, which are transferable permits, have reached a high of $170,000 apiece, while the non-transferable permits went as high as $90,000 at the municipal auction. That's why TNCs are important. They are forcing the industry to have competition. They maintain these high prices by limiting the issuance of permits and outlawing competition. But people want Uber and TNCs. They are disgusted with the service they have been receiving from the taxis. The overhead to put a taxi on the road right now is up to $60,000 a year, and that is if you're leasing a permit. These are not market values, but they're regulated. And the regulator, like I said, by fighting to keep a limited amount of permits on the road, which are not nearly as much for the Anchorage market. For the drivers, taxi drivers are independent contractors. They have no benefits, no security, and driving an Uber or a Lyft is a much better deal for the drivers. They want the option. So I'm asking for the Senate and the House and the committee to support SB 14. It's a win-win for everyone involved. Competition is what makes America great. It will increase the business and it will just make it more reasonable for everyone. These high values are, of course, put down on the public. There's no reason why we have these prices. So I hope you really look into the industry, see what the problems are, and I said support SB 14. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Next we have Bronson Fry, who will be followed by Eric Grant, then Sean Carpenter. Bronson?
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your time. I am here to testify today because I feel strongly about this bill. I believe that Uber as a concept is sound and has some value. I think that there's a lot of common sense reasons to have additional mechanisms in place for our community, for people to find a safe ride home, etc. I do have concerns about the Uber business model and the language in SB 14 as written potentially causing some problems. Specifically, what I'm referring to is the fact that the Uber business model operates by classifying all of its drivers as independent subcontractors and not as employees. I feel that this is a misclassification and can lead to many unintended consequences. I have a construction background, and the misclassification of employees as so-called independent subcontractors is a plague in many of the construction crafts and industries. In fact, there's currently a House Bill 79 and a Senate Bill 40 in the legislature now aimed at specifically defining what is an independent contractor, what is misclassification, and attempting to address this problem that has absolutely destroyed certain industries in the construction industry. And here we have a business model with Uber that is entirely based on classifying the workers as independent subcontractors and, in my opinion, violating tax and employment laws as well as the basic rights of employees. This nationwide practice that Uber has of worker misclassification has been the subject of widespread litigation across the country. There are issues such as workers' compensation benefits, unemployment taxes, things of that nature. And in my opinion, given that Uber drivers, unlike a truly independent business, they do not set fares, they cannot accept tips, they must accept rides from and to anywhere that Uber provides when they're logged into their app. They have to buy or lease a car that meets Uber specifications, normally from an Uber-backed dealer, with payments deducted from driver's wages, agree to GPS monitoring by Uber. They're, quote, deactivated if the driver doesn't comply with company rules. I do not believe that these drivers are actually independent contractors, and I think that it is problematic for a state legislature to look at an issue that is plaguing an industry like construction, that being the misclassification of employees as independent contractors, and say, hey, this is a problem so serious that we're going to have a bill introduced to address it. The governor, in fact, introducing this bill. And then over here, say, to another industry, hey, it's totally cool, whatever. You can classify as independent contractors instead of as employees. And in my mind, that risks opening a Pandora's box where this misclassification as a business model can expand out of this arena and industry into others. And I've already seen the detrimental effects of this in my career, and I'm very wary of Uber's business model for this reason. The bottom line is, Uber conforms their business model to the demands made upon it by each municipality and state. So Uber can do one of two things. Either be true independent contractors as per the state of Alaska's laws and definitions, or they can classify their drivers as employees. So Uber, in and of itself, I don't have a problem with. It's fine. More options to get home when you're drunk is good, obviously. But you got to do it right, and you got to do it in accordance with state law. So to summarize, Senate Bill 14, I believe, undermines the economic security for Alaskans by creating a large loophole in the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act, which protects workers who suffer on-the-job industries. It also undermines the economic security for Alaskans by treating transportation network drivers as independent contractors, which removes the safety net of unemployment insurance and other safety nets. It undermines the economic security for Alaskans by eliminating employee protections such as minimum wage, overtime requirements as of the Alaska Wage and Hour Act. And fourthly, I believe SB 14 undermines economic security for Alaskans by opening a Pandora's box of misclassification of employees as independent subcontractors that could potentially bleed into other industries and cause major problems for our state.
Thank you, Bonson. We have now gone over the allotted time of 2 minutes for each individual. So we've got Eric Grant, Sean Carpenter, Maurice Brown, and I implore you to keep less than a minute and a half so that we can get through the list of people who've been waiting to testify. So with that, Eric Grant.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Eric Grant, for the record. I'm a driver in Seattle, Washington. I'm an independent contractor. I've been independently contracted with Rideshare for about 2.5 years now. I've driven over 13,000 trips around the Seattle area. So anecdotally, I have a lot of data from riders, and I'm as well involved in the community with other drivers and very actively involved. I just want to say that the Rideshare platform opportunity has been fantastic for me and my family. I think that I appreciate the committee allowing me to come on and speak today, but I think that the committee should be really looking at two sides of this. You should be looking at the economic boost that it could give to the community, in that it's going to provide more opportunity for people to be able to earn income. I've heard a talk today about growing the pie. It just sort of naturally grows the pie, because, you know, where folks are saying that it's going to take, I heard the gentleman senator speaking earlier about taking a job away from a taxi driver and giving it to somebody who drives for rideshare. The way this works is quite different. Somebody could be sitting in one of your remote cities at home with their app turned on, doing whatever they have to normally do at home, and then suddenly get a request from somebody that's local in their community who wants to be driven to another area. It's very convenient. They don't have to wait 45 minutes or an hour and a half for a taxi to show up. And as some of you were explaining earlier, waiting for the taxi to show up is a problem. Maybe they don't come. And so it's convenience. I mean, I regularly drive plenty of drunk people. We've saved, I'm sure, thousands of lives, as well as many, many DUI situations. I really enjoy driving elderly people. Sometimes a child of the elderly person will order the ride, text me, let me know I'm picking up their mom to drop her for a medical appointment, or whatever, and you know, it's very nice to be able to do that. They couldn't do that with a taxi cab before. Everything is tracked, so all of the concern today about safety and, you know, these people getting in the wrong cars, it's all bogus. Everything is tracked, everything is up front, and everybody knows all of the information on both sides, so it's a very safe situation. As far as the concern for women and children, I also regularly drive school-age children whose parents order the Uber for them. And they give me instructions by text, or they'll pick up the phone and call me through the anonymized platform that they can call. And it's been a great, great opportunity. And me personally, I drive full-time. So I make a full-time living out of it, but most of the drivers are part-time. The taxi industry gentleman earlier said that the average driver drives 10 hours a day. That's not correct. It's 10 hours per week. And so this is a part-time model, designed as a part-time model, and it is something that really allows a lot of people to earn extra income. And talking about that growth of the pie, people will naturally take Uber more because they're not having to spend that extra money on a taxi, or it's because it's convenient. If they know they have to wait for an hour for a taxi, they might just stay home. Where with Uber, they'll say, hey, I can get an Uber in 10 minutes. Let's go down to the local restaurant, or let's go out and go shopping. So there's all these variables that all of the arguments today are really mute in my mind, because I've been doing this for, like I said, 2.5 years, 13,000 trips. I make a great living at this, and I know plenty of people who rely on this as supplemental income. That's the model, supplemental income. Get in your car, drive a few hours. I know plenty of stay-at-home moms who are earning money that they couldn't earn before, because it's extremely flexible whenever and wherever you want to work. It's the best for everybody out there, and I love the rideshare model and the opportunity. And folks, I know I went over, but thank you for having me on today, and I'll pass it off. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Next, we have Maurice Brown calling from Seattle, followed by Kelsey Polzinski, followed by Jim Brennan, followed by Ross Beeling, Jeremy Price, Beth Goldman, Marissa Freeman. And we do have 10 minutes left in the committee before we have to leave the room. So for those people who've been waiting, if you're not able to testify today, I will. If the bill eventually passes, I will pass on your names to the next committee chair and ask that you be first in line to testify. So with that, Maurice Brown.
I want to thank you, Madam Chairman, and also all parties concerned. My name is Maurice Brown. I'm calling from Seattle, Washington. I am also an Uber driver, and I have been driving for a little over 2 years now with Uber and got over 6,000 rides as far as trips completed. I would like to just take this opportunity to say that, you know, Uber has been a great success in my life. Prior to me driving Uber, I was with a nonprofit organization for over 22 years. And then, unfortunately, I was without a job. I was without a position. And then 60-plus years, it is hard to go back out there in the work field and basically find a job. But I had a second chance, another opportunity through Uber, to not just get a job, but to actually start my own business. And it was through Uber that I was also able to provide for my family, keep a roof over my head, and make sure that my bills are paid currently all the time. Now, with that being said, the gentleman earlier talked about, you know, we heard about DUIs and those things that basically have increased since Uber has been in the city. But I also like to address the issue concerning Uber when it comes to ride safety and things of that nature. You know, I had a request come in when I first started driving for Uber, and it was in the Pioneer Square area of downtown Seattle. I went to go and to pick this person up. Come to find out, it was a lady that worked in a bar as a bartender who was actually making a request for another young lady who obviously had been brought downtown, who was not from the area, and I got a little drunk and just left her there. Now, she called Uber and recognized that Uber also partners with other establishments within the city, and is also recommended by mothers of drunk drivers, and I came and picked her up and got her home safely to where she was staying at. Now, it had it been in another situation where there was not an Uber, there's not really no guarantee, especially late at night when the bars are closing and nobody else is there to help her get home. So, you know, that's just one testimony out of many that where Uber actually have been a benefit to the community. Also, too, I would like to just say that Uber also gives the opportunity for a diverse of people. You know, we have people who are using Uber mainly as a second income to supplement their first income. We also have all people working and driving Uber that are simply stay-at-home moms that just need some extra money for special projects, you know, and things of that nature. But also, too, and I don't want to take a lot of time, but let me just also mention that, you know, when it comes to diversity within the community and the economy, I believe that Uber and all white shares will bring that diversity to your economy. I really do. Emissions, you'll find emissions will go down if you are concerned about emissions in the city with everybody driving a car versus people begin to ride share. That will come down, as well as many other things that will benefit your city as well, or your state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Kelsey Pazinski, and I'm asking that you take less than 30 seconds and only bring up a point if it has not been brought up before, and then state whether or not you are for the bill or against it so that we can get through the remainder of the people before the committee adjourns at 3:30. So, Kelsey?
Thank you for the opportunity to testify, Madam Chairman. My name is Kelsey Kozinski, and I am a student at UAA. I'm calling today to support Senate Bill 14. I strongly believe this is going to be good for Alaska. We've heard a little bit today about this idea of an even playing field. We need to have a similar industry like the taxi cab industry as compared to TCNs, or TNCs. The
it's not an even playing field as it currently stands. So I support this legislation because it would even out that playing field with regards to workman's comp insurance and making it easier for people like new veterans, low-income workers, students like myself to earn some extra cash as they're in a transitional stage in their life. So I support SB 14, and I encourage everyone on the committee to do so as well.
Thank you. Next, we have Jim Brennan, and if you could keep your comments to 30 seconds and just mention if you're in favor or opposed to the bill and highlight any points that you have not heard brought up previously.
Okay, my name's Jim Brennan. I'm an attorney in Anchorage who've been representing elements in the taxi cab industry up here for over 30 years. First, I must say this is a travesty of process. You've allowed Uber, this is part of their playing book, to monopolize the testimony by filibustering the time, taking more than you've allotted to, so that people like me and other Alaskans are not able to testify. I guess the one point I have time to get out here is that you should not, the state of Alaska should not engage in regulation of an industry which is the transportation of passengers industry, which has traditionally been regulated by the municipalities of Alaska. This is a very involved question of how to allow TNCs to come in with a true level playing field where they are playing by the same rules as regulated taxi cab companies. Municipalities like Anchorage have wrangled with this issue. It's a detailed question, and it varies from city to city. Cities are altogether different around Alaska. Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kodiak, they're all different. You should not do this on a statewide basis. Again, I have a major complaint about the process here. You should continue this hearing to allow sufficient time for Alaskans to testify on this important issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next, calling in from Anchorage, Ross Beeling, followed by Jeremy Price, Beth Goldman, Marissa Freeman, all from Anchorage. Next, Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the esteemed members of the committee. I'm very simply put, we're in D.C. for inauguration. First time I've ever used Uber. Our kids know all about it. It was wonderful. Timely. Everything that's been said tonight is true about Uber. Innovative, quality system, prompt, local area representation. Intelligent people, clean cars, receipts on my phone for tax purposes if I want to do that, which I won't. Bottom line is, we don't like competition in Anchorage. That's what this is all about. Competition brings costs lower and improves quality of service. This is a very unique type of service. It's a personal type of service, and sorry, but the cab industry's got to wake up and realize that things are changing. And I would say consider the ICER report and the PFT to be equivalent to this argument here. Money will turn more in the economy. People like myself who have used Uber or who have never known about or used it before. And I thank you for the time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ross. Next, Jeremy Price calling in from Anchorage.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this is Jeremy Price. I am calling on behalf of Americans for Prosperity, and I want to announce our enthusiastic support for rideshare and for this legislation. We desperately need it in Alaska. There are numerous issues we could cite that would provide benefits to Alaskans. We could talk about drunk driving. We could talk about reduced DUI incidents. We could talk about the economic opportunity afforded to folks here in the last frontier. We could talk about the 50,000 active duty veteran and spouses of veterans who drive for just Uber alone. There are so many benefits that would come along with this legislation. And I can speak personally to this issue. I've taken Uber many times. I've taken cab rides many times. This is something that will provide competition and improve the services of cab companies too. When they have competition from another industry or, I'm sorry, another business, they will increase their service to stay competitive. So there should be no fear about changes and increasing innovation here at the state. So thanks for your time. I encourage you to pass this bill.
Thank you, Jeremy. I wanted to mention that the bill sponsor and myself, also a bill sponsor here in the room, Senator McKinnon has joined us again to listen into the testimony. So next we have Beth Goldman in Anchorage, followed by Marissa Freeman in Anchorage. Beth?
Thank you. My name is Beth Goldman. I live here in Anchorage, Alaska. I, like Dave O'Malley, was one of the drivers for Uber when it was here. It is so necessary, I can't even begin to tell you. Not only do I need the income and have the opportunity to make that income, we need this competition in Anchorage, all over the state of Alaska. So I love that this bill is in the Senate now so that it can serve the other areas of Alaska. So I am in support of SB 14. I don't know that I'm going to be able to stay here, and I moved up here to be by my grandchildren because of the cost of living here. And I am also almost 60 years old. I also have my chauffeur's license, and I'm excited about Uber finally coming back here. We're the only state in 50 states that does not have Uber. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth, for your testimony. And finally, we have Marissa Freeman calling in from Anchorage.
Hi, yes, am I there?
Yes, go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you very much. I'll keep this short and quick. I'm 100% in support of SB 14. I work in a transportation industry here for one of our local airlines, and the majority of the year, my airline is the only one that flies out of here, and other times of the year, competition comes up and competition is healthy. I think that it makes us as customer service agents better in our job and remind us that that there are other choices. And so I think the same thing with Uber, and taxi drivers can still work, and Uber drivers can work, and any other transportation devices like this that are able to come up and give another market an opportunity. I support the bill 100%.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and that ends the Labor and Commerce Committee today for our meeting. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 7th at 1:30, and I want to thank all of those people who waited patiently to testify.
Not sure what you said there.
I apologize.
And if anyone would like to submit their testimony in writing, we certainly would be open to that. Okay. So with that, the committee's adjourned.